part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Hello, Christian.
Hello, Skip. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You okay? You sound a little tired.
I'll be as up as I can. I worked last night, but I did. I've been up for about an hour. So
nice. That's right. You work nights.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's right. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on Part-Time Fanboy. I appreciate you coming onto my podcast. I have Skipper Martin on the line, and he is a comics writer, and currently you have a Kickstarter going on for your comic Bizarre New World, right?
Correct.
Yes. And actually, you and I have known each other for years. We haven't seen each other in a long time, but we've known each other for a while. And I actually, I read the first issue of Bizarre New World a long time ago. Like, how long ago was that?
Well, you hold a dubious distinction. I think that you may possibly be the first review, if not one of the first reviews.
Oh.
And that was back in 2007.
Okay, yeah, I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was through Anticool, and where that came from, obviously, I don't think I even knew that you were working were writing for them.
Yeah.
And I did a blast to, if you remember, oh boy, what the heck was that damn thing called? Hang on. It was the comic book version of MySpace. Well, comics, was it Comic Space?
Comics Vine, or is that it? No.
No.
I have no idea.
There was something
like that? I didn't even know it existed.
Oh, it failed badly. But for a while there, a lot of comics people actually did use it. And so I literally went down the list and went to every reviewer I could find. But then I remembered that Anticool News did a weekly review section as well. So I'd sent a request over to there. And then somehow I had found out that you were doing it. And then Ambush Bug was like, do you want me to do it? Do you want Christian to do it? I said, Christian would be great. I mean, either one, whatever you'd like to do.
Yeah.
But obviously I knew you personally. And I'm like, well, uh-oh. Maybe because we know each other dirty pool. But you were like, no. If I review it, if I hate it, I got to say I hate it. I said, okay,
yeah,
go for it. Yeah. So as long as you're, on the up and up about it, I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
And you gave me a glowing review.
Well, it was great. I mean, it was a great first issue, great series altogether. I mean, that was through like Ape Entertainment, right? Like Ape, right? That's what they were called?
Ape
was your first publisher, right?
Seemed familiar. Ape.
Come on.
Yeah, all right. I will always take, loving shots at them. But Ape Entertainment was the first publisher. And in fact, I still, in a blue moon, speak with David Hedgecock, who always treated me pretty damn well. So did Brent, Brent Irwin. So those guys, they did their part. They tried. And we all tried.
Are they still around? Are they even still around as like a publisher?
Okay. That is a very good question. I don't think, maybe I'm saying something I shouldn't, but I'm going to say it anyways. I don't think they're coming out and actually saying it, but when you haven't updated something in like over a year, I think you're effectively gone. David is now over at IDW, so he's clearly...
Oh, yeah.
But Brent Irwin, I think, is holding the flag up, and he won't say die, but I think they have to be gone by now.
It's tough out there, man, for comics. Holy cow. Like, I remember they were a small publisher, and, like, you were, like, working with them, and they had done some stuff, but hadn't really heard a lot about them. But you got three issues out, though, right, through them? Those were the first three issues?
I got four books out through them.
Okay.
Yeah, the original miniseries was three. It technically was four books, and if you remember the first issue, there was a lot of silent storytelling.
Uh-huh.
And the the question came down, would I want to make issue one a double issue? And I absolutely wanted to, because I wanted that first issue to get to a, you know, to a farther place into the story. And if I had left it as a 22 pager, it would have been a higher mountain to climb for the reader to want to come back. So to make it a double issue, making the miniseries a 3-issue instead of a 4, that's where that came from. And then we did, what happened was, if I'm going to be just brutally honest, we did terrible. I mean, we just, we couldn't find an audience.
Really?
Oh, no. I mean, I was getting so many fabulous reviews, and people, if you found the book, I can only say, you know, as an odds maker, unless there's a whole subsection of people out there who are hiding their feelings about how their disdain for the book, people seem to really enjoy the book, and the odds are, if you found it, you liked it.
Yeah.
But the odds are you weren't going to find it. It, no matter where, and you just said it a minute ago, comic books are hard.
Yeah.
They're harder than ever, and if you don't have a cape. Actually, I was having a conversation the other day. It's like, I chose an industry that is a niche industry. So many people will talk about comics in some kind of positive way. But how many people do I know that actually read them? That's a pretty small subset of people.
Yeah.
Even around the people I know.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, cut it down by, okay, how many of those people read things other than someone with a cape?
Yeah.
Or Spider-Man, right? You know, any superhero. So now that's even a smaller audience.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how many of those people happen to be reading Ape Entertainment books back in 2007 and 8 gets even smaller, and you are the tiniest slice of a tiny slice of a tiny slice.
Yeah.
So it's not a surprise.
So
even a critically acclaimed book would be a problem.
Well, why don't you tell people what it's about? Because I think the concept was really novel, but it's really funny because I remember you were worried because Heroes had just come out that same year, and ended up dying a miserable death after a couple of years. But there was a character on
Heroes. I'd like to talk about Heroes, actually.
Well,
I have something to say about that show. Go ahead.
No. I mean, you can say whatever you want. It's your hour. I mean, if you want to talk about Heroes, that's fine. No, but there was a character on Heroes who kind of like, I remember you saying like you were worried that like, like this guy does what my thing is talking about. Are people going to think I ripped it off or something like that? So just talk about the general idea.
You know, this is a subject that I see spring up over and over again for any of you new writers out there. In fact, I ran into someone at Free Comic Book Day, and I hadn't heard this little chestnut in a while. But for the new writer out there who gets worried that someone's going to come along and steal your idea.
Yeah.
There are, you know, that if there's a tiny, tiny subsection of people who are going to find my book, there's even a tinier subsection of people out there who are on the lookout to find your original idea and steal it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't. It took a long time for me to learn that. But in the beginning, when I was, because Bizarre New World really is my first writing, I had done a few little things that were completely awful. But when I sat down to say, I want to try writing something, that's what Bizarre New World became. And I'll get to Heroes in just a second, but to answer part of your question, Bizarre New World, what would happen if a guy could fly? That was the original kernel. That was the nut of it.
Yeah.
And I absolutely fell in love with the idea of just, and you know, a regular, it wasn't supposed to be me, it was just a regular person. How would you deal with that? Forget the superhero part of it, the aliens, the genies and lamps, and anything else that could, you know, make this possible. If you don't explain it, if suddenly you or any of us just bobbed up into the air, would you really jump, you know, go to the nearest roof, you know, mountaintop and scream, "Look at me, I can fly," when you don't know, is it going to go away? Could I fall? Where did it come from? What does this mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many ways. That was the original thing that I fell in love with. Wow, in the real world, if I could fly, would I tell anybody? Would I hide it? How would that change everything? But that, and by the time I'd gotten to my car, when I originally come up with the idea, 30 seconds after coming up with the idea, it's like, well, that's novel, but it's not novel. I've heard of Superman. I've heard of all the flying characters. This is nothing new. Yeah. And then about 2-3 minutes later, the idea had hit me. And I'm going to come completely clean and tell you that the idea, Bizarre New World, came from Stray Bullets. I did not rip off Stray Bullets. It is not an homage. I will say I honestly was, finger quotes and sarcasm, I was inspired by Stray Bullets. There's a scene in Stray Bullets, David Lapham, which is a classic book.
One of the best comics ever, quite honestly. Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
And still to this day, I can tell people, one of the best comics, Stray Bullets, is always usually out of my mouth in the top three.
Yeah.
And one scene in Stray Bullets where a young girl, the lead character is writing a story, and in her story, she talks about this big event that takes over the world. You know exactly what I'm talking about. In the book, this girl has discovered that God doesn't exist, and we're all just going to wink out of existence, right? Uh-huh. And in this great scene, she said, you really should read the book. Somehow, she is on a stage in front of the entire world, and she tells everybody that life doesn't matter. We're all just going to wink out of existence. And you turn the page, and there's this beautiful little panel, and it's just a globe of the Earth with a great little caption that says, "And the world erupt in chaos."
Yeah,
and that moment was a mind blower to me, and it's just a tiny little moment in the book.
Yeah,
and it's forgotten so quickly; it's not even important. But that notion that the whole world could change from one person, telling everyone that something, one thing in front of everybody, and in this world where everybody can get on the internet and television and media, one person could get up and say boo, whatever that happens to be, and just change everything.
Yeah.
And as I was driving along, a guy could fly. That melded with the idea of fly. Guy, what if everyone suddenly, at the same time, took off? He was the first. And then the whole world took off.
Gotcha.
And for the original story, the original idea was he was kind of a Charlie Brown kind of character, the guy who always misses the football. Uh-huh. And when the world, and he can fly, he's the luckiest guy ever.
Yeah.
But he doesn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And then finally he gets so... he finally works up the courage. This is not in the book. This is the original idea. He finally works up the courage to go, look at me! And boom, someone knocks into him. Out of my way, buddy. And the whole world takes off. And he's instantly forgotten. He's the fifth Beatle. He's nobody. No one ever knew who this guy was because the whole world took off and he didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And then the book was going to spin off into every story imaginable the world can fly until I run out of ideas. Whatever that may be.
Yeah.
And then once I run out of ideas, Charlie Brown would show up in a bar, drunk. The whole world has forgotten him, and suddenly he can't fly anymore.
Oh.
And now he's got to warn the world. That was the story. That was it.
Yeah.
So really, Bizarre New World was, guy could fly. This is what I used to tell people. This is my elevator pitch. Guy could fly. Whole world can fly. Everyone's going to come down. That was my three-act opus, nice. It was way too big. I could never tell that story, and it took It took years and years and years for me to finally tell it.
Yeah.
And in many ways, that is still the core nut of the book. Guy could fly, whole world can fly. 7 years later, my lead character falls out of the sky and has to warn everyone, hey, man, the sky is literally falling. And that's what the whole nut... The book is really about... The world can fly from beginning to end. That's what Bizarre New World is. So the short stories, we then did a whole plethora of short stories to dig into the entire world away from my lead character and explore flight. But when you close the book at the end, I wanted to explore. It's like Twilight Zone. but like a 3-year series of Twilight Zones, all about one story and fully exploring it, and then close the book and it's over. So that's what Bizarre New World is. Now, I will totally change gears. Heroes.
Well, wait.
Oh, go ahead.
No, let's talk about a little bit before you jump into Heroes. I mean, so you had the 3-issue miniseries.
Yes.
Like, what is happening at your Kickstarter? You're doing the, because I contributed, obviously, but and like, what you're doing the 3 issues in like a trade, and then there's an anthology series that you started building up, right? Which is different stories within this world where people can fly, right?
Well, in a nutshell, what's going on is when the book originally came out, it was always intended to be that one story I just told you.
Yeah.
Problem is, comics are very, very hard to get made.
Yes.
And they're expensive. And yes. I decided early on that I needed to pay people. This wasn't going to be a freebie. And so then the economy took a downturn. And then there was a writer's strike, which hurt my industry, and so on and so on and so on. And you can listen to all the violin stories I can, and I can tell you a lot of.
Well, yeah. Well, if you're in comics, you've got a violin story. Let's just put it
that way. Yeah. We've all got them. But
yeah.
When the original series came out, people loved it.
Yeah.
I then went to Ape Entertainment and asked them, can I get something out fast? I don't want to do another 4-issue miniseries. That'll take forever.
Yeah.
They loved that idea. So we did a double-issue one-shot, which eventually became the book Population Explosion, which is just the next chapter. Now the whole world can fly, and it's the first 24 hours of chaos. That book, again, capitalized on the popularity and all the great reviews. I got another slew of great reviews, including another one from you. Mm-hmm. And people, again, love that book. Great. Now it's time to finish the damn story. The problem was, I put all that money, just like everyone does in comics, you put your money in the singles, hoping that you get some money back to fund the rest of it. Yeah. Guess what? No money comes back. Now, my publisher flat out asked me, they told me very bluntly, dude, you've put out 4 books. People love your book. They're just not reading it. Maybe you ought to try something else. And that's a, considering the sales, that was a fair thing to say. At the time, I was furious, but I can look back and I go, no, that was a fair thing to say. Maybe you ought to try something else, dude.
Well, but how much of that is necessarily the idea's fault or your fault or the fact that you're with a small publisher? I mean, if you were with something like Image or, you know, say Marvel was doing, or, you know, Dark Horse or something, a somewhat larger outfit, would your book have reached more people? Because, I mean, it sounds like, hey, man, your book's not selling. And it's like, well, hey, man, you're like a small publisher and you're not doing shit for me. You know what I mean? Not that they didn't. I'm obviously being crass about that, but what I'm saying is like, you understand what I'm saying? It seems like they're putting a lot of it's like Superman wouldn't be Superman without what's his face, Martin Goodwin, or is that the right guy? I don't know, the guy who bought the idea and put it in a strip and like put it out on millions of newsstands, you know, so that everyone can find it. You know what I'm saying? There's a little bit of like the creator thing, and there's a little bit of like, well, yeah, but your outfit's not big enough to get my great idea. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
I know exactly what you're saying, and there's truth to it. What I believe he was getting at.
Yeah.
There's a couple things. Number one, I'll call him out. This is David Hedgecock. Okay. And David Hedgecock was, what I loved about David was he's a pretty blunt guy.
Okay.
And I'm a big fan of blunt people, and there's a lot of people in comics who will tell you everything but the truth. So I really appreciate it. Yeah, when someone's going to say, "Hey, your fly's down." Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
And where he was coming from, he told me in the beginning that he didn't care for my book, but I have to be clear about this. He didn't hate it. He loved the idea of the world could fly. He didn't love the idea of just watching some schmo deal with that before the world flew. He wanted to start issue 1, The World Takes Off. He thought that was the winning concept, and I think that's a totally fair thing to say.
Yeah.
He always liked the book, but he preferred that second part of the story. Where he was coming from with his advice, and it was always advice, it was never, hey, you should do this, schmuck. No, it was, hey, did you ever think about doing this?
Sure.
And his advice came from, maybe you ought to try something else, and come back to this, because you really do need to diversify. If you're known for one thing, it can hurt you. You can spread your career around. Trad Moore is a great example of, here's a guy who did Luther Strode, then he went off to do a two series of Luther Strode, then did a Marvel book, now he's back doing the third series, third and final series. And so when you diversify, you expand your audience, and then you can come back to your dream project. And that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is, from his point of view, it didn't sell. I could sit here and say, well, maybe if I did have an image eye on the book, that could have been a different thing. I do think that my book is more of an acquired taste, only because it's a superpower book, but it's not a book about superpowers at all. It's the human side of it. And so it's more of a blanket. It's more of a, you know, personal story. The whole world can fly, but really it's about my lead character.
Yeah.
And the people flying, that's in the background.
I mean, but there's a part of me that's like, I just feel like, I don't know, it's a lot of expectations to have on like a creator who is the writer. And I mean, I don't know, I would imagine you paid for the artist and you paid for the coloring and you paid for all that. And then, you know, because I know, I don't know about all the deals out there, but I know how sometimes it's like, you pay for everything, we pay for the publishing costs, you know, whatever, I don't need to know about that. But then it's like, the onus is on you, buddy. Like, we're the publishing company, but it's like your fault. And obviously, yeah, okay, you made a book that everyone loved, and you know, maybe not people are reading it, some of the fault is yours, but to just lay the whole ball in your court, that kind of seems like kind of shitty to me. I don't know.
Maybe at the time, it was tough love. To his credit, seriously, this really happened. To answer your question, yeah, I paid for it all. And because I learned early on, I couldn't get it through favors. I hadn't been in the industry long enough. Now, tons of people will do favor work. I didn't know anything about that. I asked the artist, what do you want to be paid?
Yeah.
And no matter, and I'm not a good... I'm not a good businessman by a long shot. What that means is, when you said, well, I want to be paid X, 99 out of 100 times, I went, okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
And usually, I could look back and go, yeah, I bet a lot of people came to me saying, well, I'll ask for X and he'll negotiate me down.
Yeah.
I didn't negotiate anyone down. I think one, maybe two times I went, well, I'm a little broke right now, can you help me out? But most of the time, it was really, what's your rate? Okay, I'll pay it.
Yeah.
And I learned very quickly that a lot of artists are disgruntled. A lot of them aren't being paid in a timely manner. So I not only wanted to... I wanted to treat it as fairly as I could.
Yeah.
If you asked me for $200 a page, if I could afford it and I thought you were worth it, I not only paid it, but I would pay it the day you invoiced me. And I wanted to set that precedent. I'm just going to pay everybody and pay them timely. And hopefully that karma will come back. It didn't. but that was a great idea, and boy, that was novel. And I learned the hard way that just being a good guy is not enough, not by a long shot. But back to David Hedgecock, I'm going to give the guy total credit. He knew how much money I poured into this. It ended up, by the time I was done, it was, now I'm over 120 grand.
I read that in an interview that you did, and that is crazy time to me. Like that, how... That's amazing.
Okay.
Like, that is crazy time to me. Over the years, right? So my daughter is 8 years old. Have I poured $100,000 into my daughter? Maybe. I don't know. Like because that's the thing, is that's why I remember your book, is because my daughter had just been born in 2007. That's why, and I remember speaking to you like in my car, in my garage, about your book, and like I don't know if it was after you read the review and been like, oh, thank you or whatever. But I remember just being like really tired and like, you know, wanting to work on stuff of my own and then listening to you talk about like how much money you had spent and stuff like that, and I'm just like, this shit is never gonna happen. You know what I mean? Like, so to hear that you've spent like over $100,000, like that to me is just like, oh my god, that makes me just, and I'm sure makes any other comic creator or aspiring creator that might happen to be listening to this just go, holy, you know, F word, you know what I mean? Like,
well, okay, first off, if you do a little bit of basic math, I do not like to call out people and say, well, I paid that guy X. That's not fair.
Sure.
Some people asked for, you know, very low. Some people asked for very high.
Sure.
And, but, you know, if I'm going to ballpark it, you get the lowball newbie artists who are going to ask for $50 a page. Then you're going to get...
That's just penciling, right?
Or is that's just penciling, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And in a blue moon, you're going to find someone who's really cheap, who's willing to ink it that cheap,
yeah.
Because they just want to break in. And then you get the average Joe penciler who's willing to work on, who's got the time, blah, 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 who's going to do 100 to 150. And anything above that is usually someone who's been around, you know, for any kind of stretch of time. So I paid anywhere between $50 a page to $200 a page. I don't remember if I ever paid anyone more than that. But so that's just the lines. Then possibly you need an inker. Then you got the color. Then you got the letters.
Yeah.
And so when you add the whole thing up, and you try to cut a corner here and there, and every time I tried to cut a corner in comics, I paid for it later tenfold. Yeah. So cutting corners ain't a good idea. So I just kept pouring it out. Well, it just became that thing I just kept doing. And first off, of course, I believed in the story. I just want to see. I really believe, because everyone wants to fly, I think this story is a natural. People are going to want to read it, and they're going to everything you want in that. If I tell you that story, or if I give you that pitch, anything you want out of that, that's what I tried to put in the book. Why would you read the book based on that pitch? I tried to get that in there.
Yeah.
So the hope was, since I'm writing something people like and care about anyways, for me to tell you that I have a zombie vampire, you know, hybrid set on Mars. I mean, it's harder and harder to, you know, sell that kind of story. But if I say you personally can fly, that should be an easy sell. So yeah. I believed in that, and let's just keep going. And then the book comes out, and then it's sink or swim. I step up to the plate, I swing as hard as I can, and someone tells me whether I did it right or not. And you were one of the first that goes, man, this is great. Okay, then I don't have to stop. I better keep going. And then
there's a part of me that feels like I should have given you a bad review now, because
no.
I feel like $100,000 is all my fault.
No. What had happened? Even if you had trashed the book,
yeah, no.
There
no.
were so many others that loved it. So there was, and what? Sure, it feeds my ego. Oh, hey, look, they like me. They really like me. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wasn't the important part. This is viable. People like it. I better finish it, because it doesn't. An unfinished project will never ever matter. Yeah. Ever.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, no one cares to be continued. They care when it's the end, unless you're an ongoing book like Superman.
Yeah.
So my story did always had an ending, and the original pitch I had in 2005 roughly stayed intact all the way through until I was done. But that didn't matter. As you're making it, as you're laying down the train track, as you're laying the track, the book's not done. And then halfway through, you know, tragedy strikes.
Yeah.
The book doesn't sell.
Yeah.
So I don't have money. And then the economy takes a turn. I don't have money to finish it. So then I keep doing as much as I can. And then my lead artist, Chris Provance, you know, his life changed, you know, especially over the long haul of this book.
Yeah.
So it became harder and harder for him to be able to fit the book in. So then I had to find a new artist, which was devastating.
Yeah.
And then that took a long, long time, because I didn't want to trade down. We've seen those books before. Well, he couldn't finish it with his original guy, so he got to fill in, and then the book goes down. So I wanted to trade up as best I could, even if that cost me more money. And so I really did hire Trad Moore.
Yeah.
I called him up and said, dude, you are nowhere near Chris Provance, but you're so good, I would be a fool not to at least ask you.
Yeah.
And he thought about it, and he said, look, I've got other things coming out right now. I can't give you 6 issues worth of commitment, no matter what you pay me, because I don't know what's coming down the road. And that was very fair. So then I kept searching, and we found, then we chose Adam Huntley, who was, you know, dropped from the gods. The guy was amazing. And so the book really is just gorgeous. So when he took over, I love what Chris Provance did, and I adore those books.
Yeah.
But then halfway through, I don't want to say it's better, because that's very unfair to the original series. I don't believe it to be better. It's just really great. And he was so awesome. But then on top of all that, I didn't want the storytelling to change. So I asked Chris to stay on to do the layouts. So the story style stays consistent with the original book.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, so the layouts are Chris, and you totally see Chris come through every page of the book. It's still there, the same storytelling point of view, that's 100% Chris. It's still there, totally there. And I know Adam would say the same thing. But then Adam brought his style to it, this beautiful, clean, rich, interesting, wonderful style on top of what Chris did, and it just made it better. And then on top of that, I think my writing got better, and so on and so on. But so when Adam came on, well, now I really can't stop. Look how great this book is. I better keep pouring out the money. And it was a few years ago where I had to sit down with my girlfriend and go, am I really going to pour this money out? I'm only like 50, 60 grand into this thing. It's going to cost me another 50 grand just to finish it. Oh. And it was like, well, don't think of it that way. How much is it going to cost you to work every month? And then you budget it out and you just do it. A little bit here, a little bit there. And next thing you know, I didn't know how much I spent. I knew it was around 50 grand.
Yeah.
And then the bills got so ugly and ridiculous at one point, I finally said, I can't look anymore. Just when an invoice comes in, pay it and don't think about it because then you get depressed.
Yeah.
And when it was over, I then and only then went through 7 years of bills and went through every single thing and added it up. And it was 118 grand and now spent another 5 grand on the marketing for the Kickstarter. So you ask me, but what is the Kickstarter? Point blank. If anyone is listening to this right now and this sounds intriguing to you at all, and I thank you if you do think it's intriguing, I could not. Here was the hard part. And this is going to get a little ugly, but here's the hard part. No one bought the book. Well, very few. And then you then draw and then you bring back Wes Choba, and then you get it lettered. We brought on Tom Orzechowski to re-letter the original books. Ed Dukeshire lettered the later books. The new book shows up, and Pop Cultured was the first new chapter in like five or six years.
Yeah.
I've got a book. I can sell this. Yeah. And it's gorgeous, and that could influence people to buy the old books, and that'll help me publish the rest of it. And then I really had to think about it and go, and then I get to tell everybody to be continued. And who knows when I'm going to finish, and I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I need the book to be finished. It needs to say the end, then I can sell it. So in February of this year, which was 9 years and 4 months, the book was finished, the final letters came in, we're done, what do we do? I could just save up the money and then release it typically, or people said put it out through Kickstarter, and Kickstarter itself is its own marketing strategy to get people to notice you, and so that's where Kickstarter came from.
So you thought about self-publishing it, or did you ever think about looking for another publisher, or you just went straight to the Kickstarter?
First off, it is self-publishing. Fractured Entertainment is myself and Troy Dye, another Ape Entertainment alumni, and we both thought, oh, we can do this better. Ha, ha, ha. You know, the proverbial, we can do this better.
Yeah.
Let's just do it ourselves. And it became very attractive to me that even if I fail, at least I don't have anyone else to blame. So let's just do it. So we are Fractured Entertainment, and we're going to come out ourselves. But how are we going to come out? Well, I could save it up, or we can kickstart this first book. So let's try Kickstarter. And that's where that came from. So Kickstarter is really the collected book, the entire thing from beginning to end. And the anthology was finished as well, which was another huge amount of money. But now it's all done and it's all on Kickstarter.
So how big is this thing? Like, is it all digital? Like, I seem to, because what I contributed to was like, oh, you got the first trade, and then the other thing you get digitally, right? The anthology. Like, how much of a scope? Like, how many pages are we talking?
Well, the core book, what I try and tell people, and that's another thing. You work for years on something so big, it becomes unwieldy. It's hard for me to say, hey, you, Joe Schmo, read my 503-page opus. That's a lot to ask somebody. And not only that, but 503 pages ain't going to be cheap. So I don't sell it that way. I don't tell people, you got to put in 500 pages. No. The main book that matters is 278 pages. It's beginning, middle, and end. It's like Watchmen. It's got an end to it.
Yeah.
Close the book, it's over. And that's all you need to read. And that's coming out in print. That's the Kickstarter. But the anthology's ready too. And if we throw that in there for print, well, that would have been a $30,000 Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can't afford that. So we'll put the anthology available digitally, and we'll leave it there as a stretch goal if we become massively successful. And the tragedy is, and I'm just going to come out and say it, in the bizarre new world way, all the money, all the time, all the effort isn't working. The Kickstarter isn't, it doesn't look like we're going to get funded. And I don't want to be a negative Nelly about it, but we're staring down the barrel of not getting there.
How many days left at this point?
I think we have about 12.
This will probably go up Monday morning. So, oh, wow. And what is your, what percentage are you at?
Oh, we're not even at a third.
Really?
No, we're not even at a third. And
what do you attribute that to? Because I mean,
oh wow, okay, I knew this was gonna come up.
Well, no, I mean, because you know, I've had friends who have done Kickstarters and they've failed, and I've seen people succeed. Like. This is the thing that always drives me crazy, because you and I, we both love comics. We've both wanted to either work or make our own comics in our own way. And, you know, for you, you've actually, you know, pushed forward. I've had ideas that I've worked on with friends. I've tried to start something. I am working on something now. But, you know, for me, it's like got a house, got a kid, got, you know, everything that, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, got a wife that I have to answer to, you know. So,
yes.
I mean, this is the thing, is like you'll see somebody who on Kickstarter will draw a cartoon strip, like, and I think this was the first big Kickstarter, that is stick figures, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's funny. It's stick figures, you know. And I have friends who are cartoonists, like people who have worked in animation and, you know, veterans who have been years and years. And they look at that stuff and they're like, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. I put all this work into my career and this asshole comes along and he just draws stick figures, you know. And they're really mad. And the guy's walking away with like $1.5 million, right? And obviously that guy took time to build up a community and had his own webcomic and stuff like that. I guess like the long and short of it is like, what is it that you think that might not have happened with your Kickstarter? Because you've got connections and stuff like that, right? I mean, there's still time, hoping, you know, and I'll see if I can reach out to some of the guys at Ain't It Cool, you know, to post something. But you know what I mean? Like, what do you attribute that to? What do you think has gone wrong or hasn't gone right?
Boy, it's a hard question to answer. I certainly hope that this...
Because you've got your stuff together. You're not some jackass. You know what I mean? Like I'll just say it. Like, you know, we've known each other for a long time. You know, obviously we're not always in touch. But, you know, if we saw each other, it'd be like, hey, what's up? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's like... And before the first issue that you did, like, we knew each other because I was good friends with your brother. So, I mean, the thing is like... you've got your act together, you've worked really hard, you've poured money into it. Like, so when you say like, oh man, my Kickstarter isn't going to make it, and I've known somebody else who worked on a project, poured a ton of money into it, didn't work out, and like almost ruined themselves doing it, you know, that's kind of heartbreaking to hear, and to somebody out there who wants to do it on their own. So how do you see the risks as being worth it? Is that too hard a question to ask?
Wow.
Or
no,
how,
no, no.
You know what I mean?
No, it's a great question. I know exactly what
especially
you're going
when
for.
There's somebody like me who's like, oh, I want to do something, but whoa, 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 wait a minute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's crazy time to me. You know, so so are we? Do we just go like, we're just crazy artists and we just do whatever? You know? Or like
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It's a difficult question to answer, and I'll let me do my best.
I'm probably talking too much, but you understand what I'm saying.
No. I know exactly where you're coming from. It's a hard question to answer. I could easily be seen as a cautionary tale. Hey, don't wind up like that idiot. Because
well,
that guy.
I'm not saying that.
No. And I want to be as blunt as I can here, because I've been having these thoughts a lot lately. Of course, when you look at something like this. It's been, you hear people say heartbroken, devastated, whatever. It is. It's a soul-crushing experience to work for almost a decade on something and pour everything you can, and then you see people come up with an idea like exploding kittens and they get millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That is not taking anything away from that guy.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's good, he came up with a great idea, and personally, I think it's a fabulous idea. But, You do your best, and I've always subscribed to the idea that hard work eventually pays off. So to put everything I could into the book, to try to make the best book I possibly could, the kind of book that I have a mantra. I've had this mantra for a very, very long time. I treat every creative project like it's my last one. If I never, ever do another one, I stepped up and I tried as hard as I swung the bat as hard as I could.
Yeah.
And so if I never make another comic book, I made a damn good, I can't say I made the damn good one. That's in the eye of the beholder. I can say I did my damnedest to make the best thing I could with what I had.
Yeah.
And so I stepped up to the plate. I swung. People didn't care. Okay. Now 10, almost 10 years in October, it'll be 10 years working on this project.
Wow.
I put all that money, all that time, all the heartache, everything into it. It's done. And then you throw a party and no one comes. Yeah, it's more than a bit of a wake-up call. And I don't want to be that cautionary tale. I really do believe. So if you're asking me right now, yeah, it's painful. It's not fun to go through this. But I also, in the back of my mind, go, well, this will be the fun story to tell somebody if maybe it eventually takes off. And we can hope. But to answer the question, which always seems to take me a while to get to, here's the answer to your question. Why didn't the Kickstarter work? Well,
it's not over yet, but...
No, it's not over yet. But let's talk about a couple things. If you are out there in this, and if you've made it this far into a podcast of a guy you ain't never heard of,
same here. Nobody's ever heard of me, so
right,
yeah.
If you're listening and you've made it this far into the podcast, let me tell you a couple things that will make it worth your time to have stuck in here. When we did the Kickstarter, we did everything we could to think of it like I'm a backer. What do I want as a backer?
Yeah.
Forget my, rubbing my hands together, greed. What am I going to get out of this? It's what am I going to give the backer that's going to, make a backer say, I want this. And so a guy can fly, the whole world can fly. I think that is a wonderful concept, but I got to show it to you. So I put a bunch of really beautiful art up. I then put... I tried to ask so many people, what do you want as a reward? Yeah. Well, we want a hardcover. A hardcover? You know how expensive a hardcover
is? Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then it's like, well, we want it collected. We want everything in print. We want gold-plated paper. Whatever you might want. So we really tried to do everything we could to make the Kickstarter as attractive as possible. That's number one.
Yeah.
Well, now I got to make a Kickstarter video. All right, well, what do I want to see in a Kickstarter video that gets me to care? So I then really tried to make a Kickstarter video that looked good, sounded good, whatever, and sold the project. I kind of went in the opposite direction because Kickstarter tells you to sell you.
Yeah.
And that means turning the camera on you and saying, I'm Joe Schmo and you should support me. And I'm probably the cautionary tale. Maybe they're right. I hate those videos. I love the videos where it's like, here's the product.
Yeah.
I don't care about Steve Jobs. I want the iPhone.
Yeah.
That's where my focus went, and I'm probably wrong. So, but my video told you what the hell the damn thing's about and hopefully made you care. Oh, that's what the book is about. And here's all these great things that you can get. All right, that's the crux of the Kickstarter. Well, that's only part of it. How do you market Kickstarter?
Yeah.
That's where things got very interesting because I thought we had a really solid bulletproof plan. And here's where it gets even more pathetic. All right, what do you do to market Kickstarter? Well, you're a comic book project, so you need to be on comic book websites.
Yeah.
So the concept was, how do I get on as many websites as I can? And then I remember Weird Al's campaign from last year where he put his music videos across a bunch of websites. Well, what would happen if I put self-contained Bizarre New World short stories exclusively across as many websites as I could? That would introduce my book to a larger audience. Yeah. And it's not a free preview. Each one of these is its own self-contained short story, beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then I went and I found 12 websites, and then I did two more stories on my sites, one on Facebook, one on Tumblr. So that was 14 stories, and that's 14 swings at bat to get people to notice about this thing, about a flying world. Well, that sounds pretty solid. Then you have the 50 people who worked on it creatively. Well, hopefully they are going to go on their social media and say, I'm in this great new project. Please support it. Okay.
Yeah.
I then have 100 cameos of people from friends, from coworkers, people who are in the book, because I wanted the book to be filled not with my buddies, but with people who could flesh the book out and be real. I wanted real people, not generic human number 5. That's John. That's Bill.
Yeah,
that's Scott.
Yeah.
So there's 100 people in the book. Hopefully some of those 100 will tell people I'm in a comic, and that'll push people to the book.
Yeah.
But that's not enough. I knew that wasn't enough. So then one of the bigger websites around is Comic Book Resources. So I contacted them about a banner ad campaign.
Yeah.
To the tune of $1,500.
Wow.
All right, so there's more money, but it's one of the biggest comic book websites out there. I'm going to go for it. To be fair to them, they said they recommended 1,000. I'm the idiot who said, well, if it's 1,000 that's going to work, let's go more.
Yeah.
Because you're coming out. You're only coming out once. So let's blow it out. So then we have banner ads there, but banner ads are banner ads. That's not enough. And so how do I target my audience to find people, like-minded people who are going to find me? I've already got everything I just mentioned. I then found podcasting advertising. And so there's a media firm. Every podcast you listen to, I don't know if you do it, but so many popular podcasts, if you listen to The Nerdist or Marc Maron or Kevin Smith or go down the list.
Yeah.
They're sponsored.
Yeah.
And the great thing about a podcast is that isn't flipping the dial and I happen to find something. I found something I wanted and I downloaded it because I chose to. I'm listening to it voluntarily because I care about Star Trek, Quantum Leap, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So if I could target my audience, great. So I then hired the marketing firm to the tune of $2,700 to put to do Bizarre New World ads across a plethora of podcasting sites.
Yeah.
So now, and that seemed really bulletproof because now I'm really hitting the people that I want to hit.
Yeah.
And so that was another part of the campaign. And then last but not least, you have Kickstarter people themselves. And the joke was, I thought, well, and then at the bottom of everything I just listed, there's the Kickstarter, I'll lovingly call them Kickstarter trolls. These are the guys who search Kickstarter looking for stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't even know what they're looking for. Hey, what's cool? And troll is such a bad word. But really, think of them as a Kickstarter shopper. And I thought, how many of those guys I'm going to net? Probably next to none. You know, that just someone happens to see me and go, that looks cool. And then, of course, you have all of your friends and family on Facebook. That seemed like a lot of audiences and a lot of pools to pull from.
Yeah.
And so then the Kickstarter launches to crickets.
Uh-huh.
Your friends don't care because they know you've been, they've heard about this book for 10 years and they don't want to hear it. Then you come out on CBR banner ads. They're banner ads. No one feels like clicking. Then the podcasts come out and every podcast that comes out, I get maybe three, not 300, three people come. Yeah. and put money towards the campaign. Now, they'll send, you know, you get this great sheet that tells you that you reached 45,000 people. And I can count on my hands how many of those people said, that's a great idea. I'm going to get off my podcast, go to Kickstarter, and bid on, and put money into it. So that didn't work.
Oh.
Then you... you can go down the list, and every single thing I did... here's a great one. I have an interview with Tom Orzechowski. The guy is a legend, man. He's been doing it since the 70s.
Yeah.
So I had the idea, let me get an interview with that guy. And so I sent my girlfriend and a crew up to Oregon to get an interview with him to talk about his career and then do a 5-minute plug for Bazaar, not knowing that he was going to talk for a very long time about his very long career and gave us gold. And then at the end, gave a really long, you know, stretch of praise to the book. And so you put this thing together thinking that you put that out in the world and people will listen to this interview and that'll drive people. Sure, it drove people to me. 5, maybe 10 people. You know, you just go down the list of every single thing I tried was a few people here, a few people there. The one that surprised me the most, two of them, the biggest ones, people were going on Bleeding Cool and advertising their Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I went on Kickstarter, I got this beautiful write-up from Bleeding Cool. It was written by Blair Marnell, a friend of mine who, one of the very first guys I went to in regards to Bazaar. He wrote this beautiful article, put in all this gorgeous imagery. We were on Bleeding Cool, and that led to count on one hand how many people left Bleeding Cool and gave us money. I see other Kickstarters doing well. So then you have to ask yourself, is it me? Well, clearly it must be, because other Kickstarters are working.
Well,
granted, that's me being self-deprecating. Something isn't working, but I'm telling you that every single thing I'm trying, something isn't working.
But it feels like, you know, because, I mean, it's not just you. I mean, you've seen, like, comic book professionals, like, really... some of their Kickstarters have not taken up, like big names, you know, where you're just like, what? Maybe not like Frank Cho or something like that, like somebody that, but people like, I think Howard Chaykin tried to do one like a year or two ago and it just went nowhere. And like, you know, other people, but it seems weird. It's how much has the Bizarre New World sort of community been fostered online, you know, before this, you know what I mean? Because it seems like the really big ones are like web comics or web creators or something.
Sure.
That sort of had the time to sort of build up their audience and, you know, and then it's like, hey, give me cash for this.
Right.
You know, which if I was going to do something on my own, that would be the way I would go. I would be like, you know, put it online. Let's see if anybody pays attention, you know, and, you know, because it's like, it seems like creating the comic is only part of the work, right? And then it's like, you've got to be your own marketing and your own, you know what I'm saying? And marketing,
yes.
Marketing, people tell me, is not like marketing like it used to be, where it's like, you get a commercial. It's like, you go and you're like, I'm on a forum, you know, and I have my banner and, you know, I go on the forum a lot and I'm like, who the hell has time to do that? Like, I got to work and I, you know, I can't be on forums all day, like posting opinions like I was in my 20s or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess like how much of your web presence was sort of built up before the Kickstarter?
Not very much, and that is another probably big nail in the coffin. At the same time, I was trying to reach out to all these new audiences, trying to reach different people, because my own pool of people didn't work the last 4 times I came out. Every time an issue comes out, that's another layer of marketing. So I marketed my book 4 times, and I saw what worked and I saw what didn't. So now I'm coming out one big time. The whole book is ready. I tried everything I could. I did 2 other things. I went to Free Comic Book Day, and I handed out 400 books.
Jeez.
I handed out free 400 books to 400 people with a postcard saying, go online and try the rest, and try even more of the book out for free. Hopefully you fall in love with it and then you'll go to the Kickstarter and help me. I can tell you because I made a specific address, so I know exactly how many people from Free Comic Book Day actually went online, which was zero. Dead zero.
Jesus Christ.
Wait, it gets better. Wait, no, it's painful. No, wait, it gets better.
No.
Because we all know, no, it gets worse. We all know the Free Comic Book Day is free people coming to get free, people coming to get free books. That's a specific audience.
Sure.
And I'm not knocking them. They're there to get free stuff. Good for them.
Yeah.
But comic book people who take the time to go to a comic book store voluntarily to pick up comic books, that's the audience I wanted to hit. So last Wednesday, I went to Comic Bug in Manhattan Beach, a very good store, and I handed out another 200 books.
Yeah.
And again, got... that would be, I believe, let me think, carry the one. Zero people came and actually.
So wait, let me just stop you for a second because, and offer an opinion, and a somewhat uneducated opinion, because you've been doing this for almost 10 years. And you, do you think that by trying to get it to print, that may be the essential flaw that. You know what I'm saying? Because
I hear you. If you talk to people and you say, "What do you want?" What do they always say? I want it in print. The people, the audience that cares about comic books.
Yes, and I understand what you're saying, but I'm talking about like, because it seems to me like I want it in print, but they don't know what they want. They just want it. You know what I'm saying? And you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's like, because it seems like the people that go online, like, okay, like I'm working on a kid's idea, right? And if I just go online and start a Kickstarter, nobody knows who the hell I am. I have a couple of people I can go to, you know, and be like, hey, can you review this or whatever? But nobody knows who I am. Nobody. I don't get out that much. I'm not famous. I've got a job. I've got a kid, right? So,
sure.
You know, so nobody knows who I am. But if I go online and like, you know, there's this, you know, the big thing is like, what, give it away for free? Or it's like, you know, pay as much as you can for this or whatever, right? I don't know. But it seems like people already are like, hey, I checked this out. I've already, and it's, I can go to it whenever I want, and this looks really good. Maybe, and then people will be like, hey, I really want to do this. Then you would say like, oh, I really want to do it in print. You know, I'm totally like, what is it, armchair quarterbacking?
Sure. Here,
you know, but I'm saying, like, did that thought ever, like, say, like, hey, I'm just going to put it on the web. I spent $100,000. But, you know, maybe that will lead to, because it's bizarre, man. Like, people will read stuff online, and when people say, like, print is dead, like, I'm like, that is complete and total BS, because you've got these people who do like web stuff and they're like, it's on the web for free, but then they'll either get a publisher from Dark Horse, like a publisher like Dark Horse to publish their thing, or they'll go online and be like, hey, I'm on Kickstarter, I wanted to, you know, get my book, you know, to the people out there who have been reading it online, I wanted to get it in print, and then all of a sudden it seems like the money comes rolling in. So was that ever a part of your, or is that something that you feel like you might fall back to if the Kickstarter doesn't take off?
Well, there were a couple theories behind that. Three things I need to say. Number one,
you're full of shit.
No, not at all. Number one, on the Kickstarter you can get the book digitally. So for, and we did that deliberately. Maybe you don't want the book in print. Get it nice and cheap. And I really wanted to, some people make their digital rewards very expensive trying to get you to get the print version. No, I wanted to make sure to cater to the inexpensive. You can get 278 freaking pages for $12. That's a cheap find me an image book that, you know,
will give you. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So the digital option is there. That's number one. Number two, yeah, there was the theory of releasing the book, whether it be a web series, you know, to try and build an audience, and maybe that was the way to go. Maybe that was the absolute smartest thing I could do now that I've got content. Or maybe over the years, release it in dribs and drabs, although that would just make me sick to even think about. But the other thing is, we now live in a culture, I thought, and a lot of people will tell you I used to say this a lot, I wanted to hit the Netflix audience. the bingers. Uh-huh. They don't. These are people who are not going to read issue one and wait for issue two. I wanted to hit the people because that's the way I am. You know, just give me the whole damn. Don't give me to be continued. I'm sick. You know, I've been reading books since 1991 when Superman died. I don't want to wait until next month. Give me the end. I don't go to a movie and watch 5 minutes of it. Damn it! I want the ending.
So, are you telling me I've been reading comics longer than you have?
Oh, I'm sure.
You started with the death of Superman?
Death of Superman was the very first. I know. I came in late, but I got one of the worst
events in comic book history in my opinion.
You know, but at the time, I ate it up, and that led to.
Continue with your thought. I'm sorry, right. I interrupted.
That's
you.
Okay. That was my gateway drug to Grendel and Stray Bullets and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways. I think my third point, and I'm probably forgetting one, my third point is Kickstarter. I feel and I believe that there is something that's not being reported right now, but a bunch of people, unfortunately like me, now know the hard way. I think that there is a Kickstarter backlash going on right now with comic book people. And I'm really? Not, and I don't mean that as some kind of conspiracy theory. If you go online right now and just go look at comic book projects, you will see a fair amount of them not succeeding.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of people call me, you know, and email me, and it's like, don't take it personally. A lot of people are failing on their Kickstarter, and I can, and here's my theory why. If I go on my, and I don't even have, I've only got a few hundred friends. If I go on my Facebook feed, how many Kickstarter people do I see? I see a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then on top of that, how many Kickstarters have I backed? I think I've backed like 28. So I backed a few.
That's a lot, yeah.
That's a fair amount. Yeah. How many of those Kickstarters have sent me something that I was really happy I got?
That's true. Well,
that's rare.
That's the thing. I think with Kickstarter, you may be onto something because I think part of the Kickstarter, first of all, there have been a lot of stories of people getting burned, like, or creators not following up. You know, there's been stories of that, you know. So maybe people are getting gun shy as far as like comic creators are concerned. But the other thing is, you know, you've got a creator and you're like, oh, this sounds awesome. And then it funds and you're like, oh, that's great. And then 6 months go by and you get it in the mail and you're like, oh, yeah, I was kind of excited about that.
And you look at it and it's packaged poorly. It's all bent.
Well, no, well, the ones that I funded have come through and they're great packages. But quite honestly, it's like, oh, I've kind of already moved on to something else. And then you just put it on the shelf and it'll sit there for like weeks, like not read. And then I'll go back to it and be like, I've got one that I funded like from 2 years ago and I put the trade down and it's still sitting in my closet. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that it's really weird. It's like you almost have to be on the cusp of the new, which sucks because I'm sort of a comic fan that has weaned myself off the cusp of the new. Like, I don't go to the comic shops every week. I don't go to, you know, I buy trades when I can, you know, but I'm not that rabid guy that needs something new. But I can see what you're saying, that there might be like some sort of like backlash because it's like, I don't get it immediately. You know, it's like, I think you're dealing with things like Amazon. Like, you know, I needed something for my house yesterday, and because there's some construction going on, and the only place I could get it, like in the same day, Amazon shipped it to me the same day, and I only had to pay $6 extra. I was like, that's amazing. So I think you may be right, like with the Kickstarter thing, that maybe there is a bit of a group of people or a certain segment of society that's like, yeah, I want to help you out, but I want it right now. You know what I mean? Which leads to my sort of like building the web presence sort of first, right? And putting it semi-free. I don't know. Like, it's just armchair quarterbacking for me, but the thing is, like, you're one of the guys, like, honestly, it's like, I don't want to see fail. I didn't want to see my other friend, like, fail at all because I think you and my other friend, like, had really good ideas been working really hard, you know, and do you have a plan, like, if the Kickstarter doesn't go? Like, are you going to go to Image? Are you going to go to other publishers? Or do you have a backup? Like, or are you just going to sit and be like, chill out for a while and be like, all right, maybe I'll write a series about lesbian vampires that everyone will buy. You know, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
oh God, I don't know. It's such a good question. Well, first off, everyone on my side, everyone on, you know, I rarely work in a vacuum. And what I mean by that is I put my stuff in front of all my friends. Hey, what do you think? What do you think? Yeah. And I get a lot, and I really know the people who are going to tell me, hey, man, your fly's down. And yeah. So I ran this campaign by everybody, and everyone was like, wow, this thing is bulletproof. I mean, you're in front of so many people, and I just kept adding to the because the other campaigns that I did way back when were, I saved up as much money as I could and I put the biggest bullet I could in the chamber and fired it, but then it was put all your eggs in one basket. I really tried to diversify this time, and it didn't matter. And what's the answer? What is the answer? What are you going to do? Well, first off, we're all just kind of shell-shocked at the lack of interest, period. It's like, because no one knows who I am.
Yeah.
And look at all the reviews I got. I could put all those quotes up until I'm blue in the face. Oh, people liked it. Look, people liked it. That doesn't matter. The concept. Hey, have you ever wanted to fly? I'll give you a prime example. Prime example. Last week when I'm at Comic Bug and I hand them, and people walk up and see the four books sitting down there. And okay, I'm giving out these free books. Okay, dude, impress me. What's your book about? What if you could fly? What if the entire human race could fly? And I turn the book over and there's an image of all these people in the air and people's eyes open wide. And it's like, look, it's not a superhero book. If you could fly in the real world, how would you deal with it? And everyone would look at me like, sold, even though I'm not paying. Yes, sign that. Yeah, comic monkey. I'll take this home and read it. I am going to support you. And none of them did. Or if they are, I can't see them. There are ways that I can, you know, track people a little bit. I'm not Big Brother, for crying out loud. But you can certainly see how many people are coming to you. And I might be getting a few people here and there. But still, you hand this book to people and they're excited. And I'm giving it to you. You can try it out and hopefully like it. And that didn't drive people to me. I have to wonder, people seem to have liked the book. What went wrong? Well, I know Kickstarter's a problem for a lot of reasons, and I tried to combat that going in. This is instant gratification, because when we're done, the book is done. You don't have to wait for me to finish it. You're not funding me to finish my book. We're just printing it. Yeah. So all we gotta do is print it, and it's gonna get sent to you. And then, not only that, there's a digital version that's complimentary. So the minute we're funded, go read it.
Yeah.
You know. So there is instant gratification. That didn't work. Everyone on my side is just kind of blindsided. We're all wondering what happened. What could we have done differently? I was asked recently, go back a few months, what would you do differently?
Mm-hmm.
About the only thing that I can say, the podcast advertising didn't work. Although, man, did that seem like a great idea. And I'm not knocking the podcast, because if you go on all the podcasts that did ads, man, they were great. They were great ads.
Yeah.
But all that proved was that people were not dying to leave a podcast and go to Kickstarter and support me.
Yeah.
So, and the best podcast, and I got some great ones. The best one, I'll throw some props their way. Mission Log, the Roddenberry podcast, John Champion and Ken. I'm sorry, Ken, I forget your last name. those guys, they really wanted to help. Okay, not out of the goodness of their heart, they got paid. But it's like, we're being paid money, we want to, you know, give you your dollar's worth. And boy, did they. They spoke about my book for like 4 minutes. They read it. They actually read the book, spoke about it, talked about how much they loved it. And that was the most successful piece of advertising I had. But it still only led to maybe 10, 20 people, you know, doing anything about it. And that's not enough to move any needle. It's just not. So if you go on my Kickstarter right now and you see close to 100 people Well, think of everything I just told you and all the different people who could have come to, you know, I reached millions of people. And that's not hyperbole. I was in the Ohio Plain Dealer newspaper website, which has millions of readers. I have a story there. That got me, count on one hand how many people who came and read and did anything about it. Okay.
Okay, so I mean, we've kind of been saying this over and over again, and I don't want this to become for you like the negative, Kickstarter thing. What do you learn from that? Like, where do you go from here? What?